Good afternoon, shooters. Welcome back, Armed Nevada Radio. We're back in the studio this afternoon.
We are.
How are you?
I'm tired. It's been a long week.
You're like on slow motion here today.
A little bit. Well, you know, we had that marathon photo shoot that you did on Sunday night.
Oh, that was insanity.
That was like, no joke, that was like a six-hour photo shoot.
We were definitely behind the lens. We were there for 5.5 hours solid of shooting. And I'm telling you, my quads, after doing that, it's a tough life being a tactical male model.
Well, and being the prop master, as I became, you know, in charge of all the guns and the... I was the studio safety officer that night, making sure everybody's guns were clear.
You were. Do you know, speaking of which, do you know how much crap I got? There was that one photo, one behind-the-scenes photo that was posted, and where myself and Lauren, the female model, were back-to-back, and Tim is behind one of the other photographers who was helping out. He's behind us adjusting clips or something.
He was holding up the reflector or something like that.
Right, holding the reflector. Yep. And it's a behind-the-scenes shot. We're not ready to do anything, but it's the one where we're posing, where we're actually going to be engaging in fire. We're going to be firing. Oh, I'm in mid-pose, and I'm waiting to go from low ready to high ready, and I've got my finger on the trigger because that's how we're – when you fire, you can't do that without putting your damn finger on the trigger. Do you know how much crap I got from people on Facebook? Oh my God, your finger. It's on the trigger.
I know. I'm coming up on target.
Like, are you – really? We're getting ready to shoot a scene where I'm firing. Pretty hard to do that with you having your damn finger on the trigger.
Well, and here's one of my biggest frustrations with our community. You know how hard it is to be – a photographer that specializes in firearms and tactical photography, because there's always a critic. And, you know, like I posted a photo, was it 2 days ago, 3 days ago, of a young lady, great model. So I kind of coached her in what she was supposed to do. And she was shooting with her strong hand or her primary hand, so one-handed. And she's out on target, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the only reason you're going to go to full extension. And she's got her finger on the trigger because she's coming up on target. The gun's been safety checked. Everything's fine. I've got people supervising, making sure everything's safe. And I got like 3 messages from people. Her finger's on the trigger.
Oh my God.
But you know what? There's 4 other people, if her finger hadn't been on the trigger, that would send me messages saying her finger wasn't on the trigger. She was up on target.
It doesn't look realistic.
Right. So you can't win, no matter what you do.
You can't. And, you know, people can understand when we're doing these photo shoots, safety is absolutely paramount at these photo shoots.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're all over the safety, the muzzle discipline.
Right.
We check, double check, triple check, quadruple friggin' check to make sure the weapons are unloaded. Every time we use them, we're only using empty magazines. We have redundancy. We're checking all that. So, yeah, everybody just kind of chill a little bit and relax. I think we know what we're doing.
I'm tired from that. And then a couple of days ago, I had the privilege and the honor of shooting a sheriff's deputy's funeral for the family.
I saw that,
photo shooting. And it was it's always a very solemn, and I think I didn't have any personal ties to the deputy, but man, it's emotionally draining when you're there.
It is.
It's a funeral. It's hard.
I've been to more cop funerals than I ever care to remember. Guys that I didn't know, guys that I did know and that I worked very closely with. And it's – whether you know them or not, it's a cop funeral is a – it's a different experience. It's unlike most funerals you'll ever go to. And the outpouring of support is just – it's overwhelming.
And that's a good word for it, is overwhelming. We were in a fairly large chapel at the Mountain View Mortuary here in town. And it was standing room only just with family. And then you add the law enforcement aspect to it.
Right.
They had every single cadet out from the Northern Nevada Law Enforcement Training Center. They had, Reno PD was out there. Sparks PD was represented. The sheriff's office, of course, was represented because he was a deputy. Highway Patrol was out there. I saw patches from as far away as Southern California.
Oh, wow.
Winnemucca.
Really?
It was overwhelming. That's the right word for it.
It is.
And then the procession. I mean, it's a very emotional experience, whether you're tied to that person or not.
Yeah. My partner was killed in a off-duty traffic accident. In fact, the moment he was killed, I heard the accident because it happened right behind my house.
Whoa.
And late at night, I'm sitting there watching TV, and all of a sudden the cable goes out.
Right.
I hear a screech and a boom, and the lights and the cable go out. I'm like, oh, Chris, somebody just crashed into a telephone pole. It was my partner.
Wow.
And he actually died before they could get him on a helicopter. So, yeah, I was a pallbearer at his funeral. And, yeah, it's hard to find the words to describe exactly what you go through when you're at a cop funeral. It's very overwhelming. It's very draining. And our prayers go out to his family.
Absolutely. And, I mean, he had a son, and he was wearing his dad's badge. And
oh, wow.
Just about everything visually yesterday was overwhelming and was very, like, emotional. So I'm a little bit tired still.
Well, you're entitled. I guess, you know, we'll give you a pass on that. let's try and lighten things up a little bit. I have a new toy.
Do you?
I brought it. Well, you can't see it. I brought it in the studio. You can see it. It's right here next to us. And if you do want to see a picture of it, go to Sean Patrick's page. It's up on his page with his Huevos Rancheros this morning, posted next to his breakfast, which is ideal. So it's my new rifle. It's my new
Speaking of
AR
rifles,
build.
All right. So I bought a new rifle. You know, we've talked about it on the air, right?
Right.
I bought a brand new Daniel Defense. I'm very proud of it. Took it out to the desert. I was shooting, 4-inch groups at 75 yards without even like zero. I threw my optic on it, started shooting, and I was right on. Dude, I love this thing already, right? Well, so I go into a local tactical store because I needed iron sights for it. And the guy behind the counter.
Which local tactical
I'm not going to say because I really like the guy that owns it. I just don't know if the guy working the counter, you know.
Okay.
I don't know what the deal was. So I go in. I say, hey, I'm looking at iron sights. He's like, great. We have Troy. We have Magpul. I've got metal Magpuls. I've got offset Magpuls. And so I'm looking at the different options. And he goes, oh, why do you need iron sights? Did you buy a new rifle? I said, yeah, I bought a brand new Daniel Defense. And like, I'm super pumped about it, right? And he goes, well, you wasted your money.
What?
Yeah. And I'm like, okay. He's like, well, you could have built a much better rifle for a lot cheaper.
You could have built a much better rifle than a Daniel Defense?
That's what he said, yeah. And okay. So this wasn't the owner of the shop. I like the owner of the shop. I've done business with him. He's a great customer of my business, so I don't know that I want to trash his business. But the guy working...
No, we don't want to trash their business. It's a good business, but...
Working the counter, I was a little bit like taken aback, like a little surprised.
Well, yeah.
I'm like, what?
I mean, you don't bash a guy's rifle. It's like talking bad about his wife or something.
Well,
you know,
just
say nice build and leave it at that.
Right. Well, and I bought it. It's not like I can go return it. Not like I want to. I made an informed.
Why would you? There's no need to.
I made an informed decision. Plus,
Daniel Defense is one of the top quality rifle builds out there.
No doubt. Well, and if you watch the their torture videos on, I mean, they build a great rifle. Not only that, I didn't pay retail for it. I think I got a good $300 off of whatever the MSRP was, maybe more. So I got a great deal. I got a great rifle. I'm happy with it. It shoots great. So anyways, I thought, you know, what a great topic for us maybe to discuss is buying versus building.
We aren't going to talk about that. That's a good topic today. We're going to talk about factory-built rifles versus rifles you can build on your own based off an 80% lower or, you know, just a billet lower that you put together yourself if you've got the knowledge to do so.
You know what else I've been asked about is since I've kind of talked about the fact that I have an HK VP9, people have asked which one do I like better, the PBQ or the VP9. So we could talk about that today.
Right on.
Since I think they're two of probably the best polymer pistols you can buy nowadays.
I'll turn that over to you. I'm not a big HK guy. I don't know what it is. I'm not sold on it. They don't flip my skirt up.
Yeah. Well,
they just don't.
They're expensive.
They are expensive. Well, we're going to talk about rifle builds. We're going to talk about Ben's HK because Ben is clearly all a Twitter, like a little schoolgirl over HKs, and that's, you know, it's like Ford versus Chevy. That's fine.
And I'll explain why I like my HK.
And we will listen with open minds and open ears. We're going to talk about we got some headlines in the paper.
Check out this headline: Hurricane Katrina cops being forced to return donated Glocks. Should we talk about that? I think it's kind of a cool story.
If they can find them.
Well,
sure.
So 10 years later, they're asking for the Glocks.
They're
back.
Asking for their Glocks back.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Have you seen this video of the cop drawing a gun on a man for filming in his front yard?
We're gonna talk about that a little bit because look, I'm usually the first one to jump to the defense of these police officers on these YouTube videos, but this guy, I'm having a hard time defending this one.
You know, I always when these things come out, I was trying to give law enforcement the benefit of the doubt. You know, maybe there was, you know, and I think I put a disclaimer on my comments last week that, you know, we only saw a snippet of that video and what happened before and what happened afterward.
Right.
when I was watching this video last night, I seriously was trying to give this cop the benefit of the doubt.
But I can't.
I don't think there's anything excusable when it comes to his behavior.
There's a little bit of blame to put on both sides of that issue. I mean, the guy that the motorist, let's just call him the motorist, the guy that's just hitching up his boat, I think,
yeah,
in the cul-de-sac. A little antagonistic on his part,
but
I can understand. I don't condone it, but I can understand it.
But you know what? When you go through and you apply for law enforcement, and I applied for the California Highway Patrol 10 years ago, they put you through rigorous testing, right?
Mm-hmm.
They put you through rigorous psychological testing.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be able to stand up and be able to endure confrontational people. That is part of the job.
It is. And I'll say, well, let's talk about when we come back for the break, we'll talk about that. We're going to wrap it because there's something I want to say about that rigorous testing, in air quotes.
And also when we come back, well, I'll tell you what my dad, he was in the studio last week with us.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you what he said about last week's discussion / argument.
I was going to go ahead and assume he sided with me on that issue. All right, we're going to be back right after the break. KNews 107.3, our Nevada radio. And we're back. We're back. We're back. We're back.
We are back.
So, talking about rifle builds.
Yeah. Right? Did you want to hear what side of the argument my dad was on?
Oh, yeah. I want to hear about
that. All right. So, yesterday, my dad was up, or not yesterday, last week, my dad was up from Sacramento visiting, and I invited him to the studio to listen to our show. So, he listened to our whole discussion last week, and I got pretty good feedback about that discussion from everybody. But it's funny, I get in the car, you know, my dad is old school, right? And he's like, I think I agree with Gary. And
I like him already.
So I tried to explain to him a little bit more of my perspective, and he acknowledged it, but I think he came down on your side. So, well played.
I have a newfound respect for your dad. That's
well done.
Awesome.
Well done. Well,
thank you. Thank you. I mean, it was a good debate. It really was. You know, and I did. I got some feedback, too. I didn't have anybody that the feedback that I read or that I received personally,
yeah,
everybody was on the fence. Nobody was really one side or the other on it. They were, well, I can see the need from a law enforcement standpoint. You have an obligation to make the stop. But then again, you know, a right not practiced is a right lost. You know, so nobody was really – they were, you know, shame on you for being wishy-washy.
Well, so that's good.
Get on one side of the fence or the other.
That's good. So I represented a good argument for the libertarian side, and it sounds like you represented a good side for law and order.
And my son weighed in on it. My active duty Air Force son from Langley Air Force Base, Virginia, weighed in.
Yeah.
And actually weighed in on the libertarian side.
Woo!
But flip side of that coin, since he is pursuing a career in law enforcement,
yeah,
does understand the need to at least make a good faith effort on the side of public safety. So, you know, there is that. I mean, we're going to get into the weeds again.
Rehashing this whole thing. Yep.
But, all right, rifle builds.
Built versus bought.
Built versus bought. You and I both own probably one of the finest factory rifles out there, Daniel Defense.
I'd like to think so.
I'll go right out there and say it. It's
right.
One of the finest factory-built rifles. And I've owned Colts, I've owned Bushmasters, and I've now owned a Daniel Defense.
Yep.
Hands down, finest factory-built rifle I've ever had. However, you can go out and buy a Daniel Defense rifle, $1,800 bucks? Upwards of that?
Right now the range is the ones that they had over at Sparks Black Rifle, they range anywhere from $1,300 bucks all the way up to like $2,400.
Okay. Not unpricey. I mean, that's a good chunk of change.
Right.
Versus you can build, if you have the knowledge and the know-how and the expertise to do so,
right,
you can build a high-quality rifle customized for under $700 bucks, $800 maybe on the high end.
Yep.
So I picked up a new rifle this week. Happens to be a custom build. Picked it up from somebody that follows me on my Trinity Tactical page. So I trust the guy.
Right.
And it's a, you know, it's a custom built rifle. And I brought it in the studio today. I know you can't see it, but we'll put some pictures up of it later on. And he built this rifle. I was a little skeptical. The reason I picked it up was I had a Trigicon ACOG, basically $1,200 bucks worth of optics, right?
Yep.
Sitting in my closet. And you were the one that convinced me, you know what, just put it up, Gary.
Well, you're not using it, and I figured that's an expensive optic to just be sitting in the closet or sitting in a bag.
It is.
And you and I think, would rather have another firearm.
Oh, absolutely.
Than an expensive optic sitting unused.
So I put this optic up, and I was asking, I think I was asking 8.5 for it.
Yep.
It's about a $1,200 optic. I was asking 8.5. And guy messages me and says, hey, would you consider a trade? And of course, I'm like, huh? Of course I'd consider a trade. What do you have? So he sends me pictures of this rifle, and I sent them to you, and you said, what was your initial reaction?
I was a little unsure.
You were?
Well, because from the pictures, I wasn't sure if it was a good build or not. Does the guy know what he's doing? Does it, you know? I was a little unsure.
Well, I went and saw it. I was immediately sold on it. The lower is, now this guy did a good job. I have to commend this guy. He did an excellent job on this rifle. He didn't skimp. This guy didn't throw a bunch of parts together.
Right.
Battleborn Tactics lower. Now, I was originally skeptical when I saw that he told me, he says, well, it's a Battleborn lower. And I'm like, no. Battleborn lower, right? No.
Why don't you like Battleborn lowers?
Oh, we don't have enough time in the show for me to tell you why I don't like Battleborn lowers.
They're a little overpriced.
They're a lot overpriced. And I'm hearing bad things about them. I'm hearing bad performance issues now that they're out there.
Yeah.
This is from a company called Battleborn Tactics, which is a local Reno company.
Okay.
It was originally an 80% lower, which means it was 80% complete, all aluminum billet, green anodized lower.
So for those that aren't in the know, an 80% lower is one that hasn't been milled out in certain areas.
Right.
It's not considered a lower, so it's not you don't have to go through the background check process.
Correct.
Because it still has to be, I guess, from the government's perspective, you have to manufacture it.
Right. So that's the lower. I think the upper was a Scripps. I can't remember.
Okay.
It's got a Daniel Defense free float carbine length rail on it.
Okay.
Magpul UBR stock, collapsible stock. Has an EOTech 512.
Well, see, that's where when you told me he threw that in, I was all for that. I mean, you picked up basically, what, a $400, $450 optic?
Oh, $500 optic.
Plus
easily.
A rifle for your ACOG?
Right.
That's a good deal for
the
me.
The sights on it are, it's an MTI rear and I'm trying to remember who makes the front sight. It's an MP5 front sight with a tritium post.
Is it mid-length or carbine length?
Carbine length.
Okay.
Carbine length. It's got the M4 style barrel, Blackhawk Hogue style pistol grip.
Yep.
And, of course, forward assist, dust cover. The only thing I'm going to add to this one is I'm going to put an extended tactical charging handle on it just because that's how I like to roll. But all in all, quality build. And
right.
I haven't gone out to shoot it yet. We're supposed to go out. You and I are supposed to go out maybe this next weekend.
Yep.
School starting Monday, but we're going to go out and shoot it. But I'm very impressed with this rifle. And for what I traded for it, if I were to build this rifle, you're looking at probably maybe a grand that he's got into it. And it's a higher end build.
Right.
So
it looks nice. I mean, we'll take it out and see how it shoots. I've got nothing against building a rifle. A little bit of my bot rifle was impulsive. We walked in there and I liked it.
It was a lot impulsive. Who are you kidding? That was ooh, I see it. I want it.
Basically. And I'd had a good month with my photography and I figured, what the hell?
Exactly.
Did I pay more than I could have built that for? I don't know.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, you can build a rifle you can build a quality rifle right now for $500, $600. And it's a great rifle. Chrome lined barrel. It's going to shoot multi-caliber for either 5.56 or 223.
Right.
You can put the bells and whistles on it. And like we said earlier in another show, right? It's like Barbies for men.
Yeah.
You can accessorize them and still accessorize it for $600, $700, $800 on the top end for a build.
But you know what? With the Daniel Defense, besides maybe a hand stop or, forward grip and iron sights, there really isn't anything I want to do to it. And that was part of the reason I liked it was that in a sling. But it has the quick disconnect mounts already on the rifle.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, it was, I spent, what was it, $1,350 or $1,400 on it. There's not a damn thing I need to do to it.
That's what I like about this one. I miss my carbine. I had a Bushmaster that I got rid of, and I miss the carbine length. My Dan the Defense, like yours, is the full length,
right?
The rifle length, and I miss that carbine length. I miss the mobility. I miss the shorter profile on it.
Yeah.
I talk about the quick disconnect sling. I'm sold on that. I've been a 1-point sling guy forever, And the 2-point quick disconnect, I'm sold. Oh, my God. Much more stable than a 1-point.
Well, you showed it to me, and I'm sold, too. I really like it.
Oh, I can't wait to go out and shoot it.
But, you know, just my, you know, and I've only taken my Daniel Defense out once to shoot it, and I was really impressed with how it shot. It was awesome. I did it in front of the kids, and I'm like, all right, new rifle. Let's check this out. Threw the magazine in. We had one of those spinner targets, you know, where, the, you know, it's kind of, what is it, four different faces, and it spins around as you hit it.
Yeah.
And it's
on the ground.
And it's steel, yeah. So I walked off 75, 80 yards and came back, and I was like, well, if I hit it once or twice, that's, you know, whatever.
Were you shooting irons for the first time?
No, this was optic. But I didn't zero the optic. I just threw it on the top, and I figured, let's see how close I am. And I shot 20 rounds, the first handling with it, and I hit 17 out of 20.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
That's nice.
Well, so my kids are like, dang, Dad. I'm like, that's right.
And you're like, I'd rather be lucky than good.
Look how good a marksman I am, kids. And just remember that when you turn 16 and you want to start dating.
I got to tell you this, too, speaking of kids. Yeah. So the other morning, laying in bed with Sophie, my 2-year-old, we have our quiet time in the morning. She likes to get on my phone and look at puppy videos. So we're on the phone, and actually I'm on Instagram looking at different rifle configurations.
This is a good story.
And Sophie sees a picture of a guy with a rifle. Guy's all multi-cammed out, kitted out, with an AR. And she says to me, she says, Daddy, is that you and your gun? And I said, no, honey, that's not Daddy. That's somebody else. I said, would you like to shoot Daddy's gun someday? And she goes, no, I want my own gun.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
Oh, my tears.
Oh.
I literally welled up with pride at 2 years old. And you know what? If you don't like it, suck it. That's my daughter. I was so proud. I mean, from the mouths of babes.
Well, I've got – I don't know how much time we have left in this segment, but I
– we got plenty of time.
We have to take an obscene profit break here soon. But when we come back, let me tell you, my kids use their own money to pick up a rifle.
Oh, God bless them. That's freedom right
now. I know.
All right. Take us out of here for the break.
All right. This is Armed Nevada Radio on 107.3 KQ.
Jeez. All right. Here we go. We're back. You need to wake the hell up.
I told you I'm slow.
Jeez.
Oh.
Like, what did you do, a line of coke and then some heroin this morning?
No.
What's wrong with you? All right. Here we go. So we're talking about rifles. We've got some headlines in the news, don't we?
Well, I was going to tell you the story about my kids.
Oh, yes. Bring those on.
Well, so Haley, it was her birthday. They wanted a .22 rifle forever. And ironically enough, we had started finding .22 ammo around town, finally.
Who has it?
Walmart had some.
Wow.
So my wife and I bought a bunch of boxes, you know, in tandem so that we could get around their limit. And then where else did we find it?
So you could get around their limit.
Yeah. Sportsman's Warehouse had a couple of boxes. So, like, in the last week, we've put together – I have 3,000 rounds of .22 now.
Jeez.
I know. I was excited, right? And the kids were excited. But we didn't have a .22 rifle. And so Haley is like, well, you know, she got all this birthday money. And she goes, I really want a rifle. I don't think I have enough money. And I'm like, well, let's go check it out. So we went down and we looked at a couple of 10-22s, and she found this one that was, I think it's called like Wolf Camo.
Uh-huh.
And it's a 50th anniversary one. It's kind of cool. And she's like, I want that. So she had most of the money, and I'm like, I'll make up the rest. So my kids bought a 10-22, I bought it. It's, you know, theirs to use under my supervision.
Right.
And then she had a little bit more money from some, you know, some more cards came in late, and we went down and she picked out an optic at Scheels. And
really?
So she bought, you know, just some cheap Barska optic, but she paid for it.
Well, good for her.
So now they have a really cool little 10-22 with an optic on it, and we were shooting it, and man, it's fun.
That's freedom right there.
It is. So
that's awesome. Good for her. Well, tell her I said that's great.
Raising our kids right.
We are raising our kids right. We are. Yeah, my wife was a little leery about, you know, Sophie
wanting a rifle.
Well, honey, come on now. In due time.
Yeah.
When she's three.
You
know, but, you know, she's like, well, you know, I'm not so sure. But I was like, come on, relax. It's okay. you know, let me enjoy my moment.
We're trained professionals. We can handle it.
Trust me, I know what I'm doing. I'm a professional.
Well, so I was going to talk about polymer handguns. So I just picked up a, I shouldn't say I just, so what was this, about a month and a half ago, mm-hmm. I picked up an HK VP9. For me, I shoot my handguns left-handed, so my mama didn't love me enough or something. Isn't that what you always say at the range?
You weren't breastfed enough, I think is what I say at the range. But we'll go with your version.
All right, so left-handed. So it presents a challenge because my wife is right-handed, and I want anything that sits in our safe for her to be able to pick up and use if she has to in a defensive situation. Right. And so I want a gun that's truly ambidextrous that I can use left-handed without having to switch anything around. This is one of my gripes about the Glock. Yeah, I could switch everything around, but then my wife can't use the gun proficiently because she's right-handed. So the Walthers and the HKs are fantastic because they're completely ambidextrous handguns. So the HK has slide releases on both sides. It has mag releases on both sides. You don't have to switch anything. It's a completely ambidextrous gun. Not only that, I think the HKs and the Walthers, specifically the PPQ and the VP9, are two of the most ergonomic handguns I've ever picked up.
They are. I'll give you that.
And you've picked up both, and you've said as much.
Yes, they are very comfortable to hold.
And this week, I finally got around to switching out the back straps and the side panels on the VP9. Oh, it was like heaven. So I'm running the small back strap with the large side panels that slide in. Oh, man, it's like a gun that was like custom built for my hand.
Really?
It's amazing. So really like this gun, fully ambidextrous, totally ergonomic. And so I've had people ask me, well, which one do you like better? And I will say, based on my shooting experiences, and I've shot, you know, M&Ps, I've owned XDMs, I've owned Glocks, and I would say, bar none, these are the two best polymer handguns you can buy. The triggers are phenomenal. The ergonomics are amazing. The only thing that's bad about them is because they're lesser used guns, mm-hmm. not a great selection of holsters or accessories.
Yeah, there is that.
But I run Kydex, so just about everything's custom made for me anyways. So it's not a huge impediment, I don't feel like. And not only that, the PPQ and the VP9 both fit into a Glock 21 Safariland holster perfectly.
No play, no...
No, not
no
anymore.
Floating around in there?
No, it's very tight. It fits perfectly. Since I picked up the Glock 21 holster for the Glock light instead of the TLR1, I had to do a little melting around the light area, but the gun area is perfect.
Nice.
Yeah. So you just got to be a little bit more creative. So if you buy a Glock, obviously you've got a huge...
Well, don't feel bad about the custom holster. I mean, that's the way the industry's going anyway. We had LIG Tactical in here the other day, and there's JM Custom Kydex, two great companies here in town. That's the way to go. I mean, now with the custom custom-made holsters versus the factory holsters,
right,
because you are limited.
So to me, that's not a huge impediment. So I love both guns. I'm going to have to say, in my experience, the trigger on the PPQ is a little bit better. I like the way it's got a little bit of take-up, and then it just breaks, mm-hmm. and then it's got that eighth of an inch reset. I mean, it is amazing. I think you've shot it out at the range.
I've never shot that gun.
What?
No,
I thought
I've never
let you shoot it. Maybe it was Christian I let shoot it.
I think you let Christian shoot it.
All right. Well, next time we go out, you're going to have to shoot
it. Your other
friend. My other friend. My other gun friend.
Yes.
So I think the trigger edge is to the PPQ, but I like just about everything else about the H&K. The trigger on the HK doesn't have the take up. It breaks, and then I would say there's like a quarter inch reset. But you know, you and I have talked about reset when it comes to defensive firearms, mm-hmm. and it's fun when you're at the range, but I think when you're in the heat of the moment, it doesn't matter. You're not waiting for the audible reset when you're defending your family.
Right. In the heat of the moment, under the stress of battle, yeah, you're not gonna be thinking about reset. You know, if you've trained with it religiously,
yeah,
it'll happen because of muscle memory, but it's not something you're going to think about.
And accuracy on both is amazing. I think with those amazing triggers and the good ergonomics, I'm completely proficient with both. Took me a little bit longer to kind of finesse my accuracy with the H&K. But here's the other thing. The H&K, I think street price is like $629 is where I've seen it here in town for the cheapest.
It's a little on the higher end.
It is a little bit on the higher end for a polymer. And that whereas with the PPQ, you can find those right around $500.
Why are they that much?
You're paying for the name. I really think you're paying for the name.
The name and the ergonomics. I mean, is it just the name? Is it? I mean, it's got some great features. Well, but that's a little higher end for a polymer gun.
The PPQ and the H&K are so similar. Why can Walther produce one for $500 and H&K is producing it for $629? I think you're paying for the name. I think the H&K is overbuilt a little bit, which some people may
meaning
really
what.
I mean, you look at the slide, it is a beefy slide. I mean, there's a lot of metal.
It is.
There's a lot more metal in the gun. If you look at the internals, it's pretty stout. Like, I think they over-engineered it, which is pretty common with H&K.
It's a tall slide, too, which is a feature I don't like.
It is on both of them, but I don't think it contributes. I don't think it's any more snappy or, you know, doesn't have as much muzzle rise or flip as anything else I've shot. The only other thing I found is, so for those of you that may be looking at this gun, there's something weird with the rail on the Walther. So my TLR1 mounts perfectly to the HK. You know, you got that perfect.
Your streamline.
My TLR1. There's a perfect amount of space between the trigger guard on the H&K and where the light mounts up. When you put it on, and I've tried all the different keys that come with this rail-mounted light, when you put it on the PPQ, it either rides smashed up against the trigger guard and doesn't work very well, or it's like hanging off the, you know, there's too much space.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what Walther's doing with the rail on that thing. If it's like a non-state, they say it's 1913 Picatinny. But
do they have their own proprietary light like Sig and Glock did?
No, they don't.
See, that might be the solution.
So that's kind of, that irritates me a little bit, but I love my PPQ so much, it's a minor irritation. And that's the other thing with both these handguns. I have not read anybody that's been unhappy with buying either one of them.
Well, I'm still waiting to get my Glock back.
Yeah.
And this isn't to bag on my buddy Russ, who's doing all the custom work on the slide, because quality takes time.
Well, it does.
I am having a lot done.
It's not like you're just getting it sprayed and...
Well, no. It's getting dovetailed for the Trigicon.
Right.
Reflexive sight. Reflexive optic.
Are you going with Trigicon?
I went with the Trigicon.
Okay.
The non-battery one.
Okay.
Which is really nice. I'm going with the Trigicon, reflexive sight, upgraded sights. You have to catch, so you can co-witness, dovetailed, tapped, and then, of course, it's going to be Cerakota, but I haven't decided on the color yet. So I need suggestions for a color because I've got a flat dark earth lower on that Glock 19, but I need an upper.
You can't do burnt copper because I'm doing that.
I can't. I don't want to be like you.
You always want to be like me.
I do. Secretly, I do. All right. When we come back, we've got headlines. We're going to close out the show. We've got some great headlines to talk about. We will be right back after the break. Arm Nevada Radio, KNews 173.
Welcome back to Arm Nevada Radio. This is Gary Ben on 107.3 KNews, and we're just back from our commercial break.
Headlines.
Where did we leave off? Oh, we talked about the HK and the Walther, but we're going to get into headlines. I'm going to post pictures of those two handguns, though, just so people can see what we're talking about. Headlines. All right. Well, so this week, another theater. I don't even want to call it.
Another theater attack.
Do we call it a shooting?
We can't really call it a shooting.
Because the only shooting was the cops dropping this guy, right?
Right. The only shooting was the police killing a guy. He was armed with a hatchet and an airsoft pistol.
Okay.
And apparently, like typical shooters, long history of mental health issues. Police end up killing him. But the big part of this story is not so much that he didn't kill anybody. Nobody was wounded. The big part of this story is Tennessee lawmakers, on the heels of a second theater shooting, now are calling for fewer restrictions on gun ownership and gun possession.
Surprising.
In their city. They're actually pushing to loosen where individuals can lawfully carry concealed and open in Tennessee. They say that this lawmaker says, "I honestly think evil is in a person's heart. I don't think gun legislation is necessarily going to alter or help or hurt," said Representative Goins, who has sponsored several gun-related measures in the past. "I do think people being allowed to defend themselves without restrictive gun legislation does help keep the body count down in some situations." Holy crap.
Right. And when was the last time you heard a politician say that? That's pretty surprising.
Never.
So there's two things that have come out of this incident. The first one is, You know, you and I both went to the Lieutenant David Grossman presentation. Colonel, excuse me. We went to that presentation that was put on by, I think it was one of the veterans groups.
Well, it was for the Washoe County School District, like anti-active shooter or anti-active shooter response.
It came in response to the Sparks Middle School shooting. Right. And I think it was actually put on by like the one of the veterans groups. Yes. They paid to have him come out. You know, and he said, as a society, unless we're willing to remedy some of the things that are the underlying causes, so let's say lack of mental health treatment, lack of mental health interventions, lack of outreach to people that are hurting or whatever the case may be. And I agree with him, unless we're willing to tackle the degradation of the family, just all of the social things that we've got going on, and I don't want to get into the weeds of that too far. Unless we're willing to tackle all those underlying causes, we have to be willing to ready to defend ourselves. If we're not willing to cut it off at the pass, then armed citizens are the last line of defense.
First line and last line, absolutely.
You know, because you know,
one of the things that Colonel Grossman said was, look, number one, don't lose your rage
right
over the fact that this is what it has come to. So knowing that this is what it's come to, why would you not allow your citizens to defend themselves?
And here's my ear to, like on Facebook, as soon as this quote-unquote theater attack, I don't know what else to call it, or this theater incident, I had people on, I've got some liberal friends on Facebook, and you know,
have liberal friends?
I have a few. I like it because they keep me sharp.
They keep me irritated.
I know. So one of them posts, he goes, you know what? I don't post anything political very often, but something has to be done. I've had enough. And he goes on and on and on with this rage, but then he stops short of saying anything of substance. So I posted, I said, well, so what do you think the solution is? And he goes, I don't know. We just need to do something to restrict guns getting into the hands of people that are doing these kinds of things.
Oh, that's not vague.
Well, you know, and on the face of it, how do you disagree? Yeah, I agree. We should.
Well, of course we should do something.
Right.
Okay.
But the funny thing is all of these people are posting this, and anytime I never come out and attack. I want to know what they're thinking. I say, hey, what do you have in mind? What do you think is a good solution? Nobody can ever answer me. And because the thing is the solution is not, guns aren't the solution, or taking, you know, trying to pass new gun laws isn't ever, it's not stemming any of these things. It's not, you know, solving any of these issues. I mean, here we've gone through 5 years of these active shooter incidences, and I don't think any amount of gun laws is going to change anything. These active shooter things, traditionally, they happen in areas that are gun-free zones.
Right.
They happen in states that are very restrictive. You know, we look at where the murder rate is skyrocketing lately, and you look at Baltimore. Baltimore has some of the most restrictive gun laws in the country. I don't think...
A city out of control.
I don't think the knee-jerk reaction for gun control is ever the right solution. Unless we're willing, and we're not, unless we're willing to look at the root causes of these things... I'm sorry. We have to have armed citizens as the solution.
We have to. You know, one of the solutions that I've always proposed is we have to get tough on prosecution and mandatory minimum sentencing for gun crimes. When you have district attorneys that are pleading cases out because
right.
they've got an unbelievably heavy caseload, you're just going to have more people out on the street, more criminals
out
on the street.
Not even pleading down. Well, I wish I had it in front of me. There was an article where the U.S. Attorney's Office around the countries, or the U.S. Attorney's offices around the country, are not prosecuting gun crimes. I mean, if you look in this area, as much as I hate the ATF, there isn't a presence here. They're not.
There's two agents for the entire state.
Well, and I think one of them is based in San Francisco. You can't tell me there's no boots on the ground for gun law enforcement. So we're not even enforcing the existing laws, let alone new laws. So anyways, I don't...
Well, you got to prosecute on the local level, too, because that's where the crimes are occurring, is on the local level.
Can I read a story that doesn't get me so mad?
Sure.
This one is just ridiculous. All right, so let me... it's funny. Articles never want to pull up when we're on the air. So basically, the gist of this article is a small town in Mississippi that was considered ground zero for Hurricane Katrina. So it was where they made landfall the hardest, right?
Right.
They're a small police department. They used personally owned weapons for duty weapons. And so they got flooded out. And so they lost all of their weapons during Katrina. The department, the station was flooded. They lost their shotguns, their patrol carbines.
They were unrecoverable?
apparently. That's what they said. And a lot of them, or most of them in the department, lost their handguns while they were trying to get out. I don't know. That's the art. That was
lost their handguns.
That was the background. So Glock comes along and says, hey, we're going to donate a bunch of 40 caliber duty hand. What is that? The Glock 22?
Yes.
So they donated 40 or 50 of these Glock 22s to the department. And because they were replacing personally owned handguns, I guess they were donated and they became their personal, but also duty. Well, so over the course of the 10 years, all these, you know, a couple of officers have left the department. Some have retired. Others have laterally transferred to bigger departments. Well, so the, let me see what the, who is doing the auditing. State officials contend that the weapons should have become city property when they were donated, even though they replaced personal firearms, and now wants them accounted for or the officers who signed for them to have to pay the city $400 for each gun or surrender them to the city. If they don't, those guns will be reported to the NCIC as missing or stolen. Can you believe that? So they lose their personal weapons. They get them donated by Glock. The city then comes 10 years later and says they're city property. If you don't return them to us or pay us $400, we're going to report them as stolen.
And turn you into a felon.
Yeah.
Wow.
What kind of a story is that? Can you believe that?
Well, you know, okay. They did become city property. I got to give them that. They were city property. If you lost a personal gun, you know, because of the whole ethics and everything involved, you know, you can't accept freebies as a police officer. So those guns did become city property. They went when they were donated, especially if the officer signed for the gun, right?
Then efficiency, it becomes 10 years after the fact.
Well, yeah, what? I'm not even getting into the efficiency of it because it's clearly inefficient. Why are they waiting 10 years? Why didn't this happen a year? You know, a year after the incident. Wait a second, you've been gone for a year. Where's our gun? We need our gun back.
Right.
At least they're given the opportunity to buy them. I got to give the agency credit for that. And $400 for a Glock 22.
Yeah, well,
even if it's a 10-year old.
One that's 10 years old.
That's a decent price. That's what you'll get. That's probably what you'd spend retail on it.
Yeah, but if I don't know, I would give it back personally. I just
give it back. Listen, that's your choice. Give it back or buy it. And if you don't, and it is city property, and you refuse to, well, misappropriation of city property, and if they're going to enter it into NCIC as a stolen, hey, then you suffer the consequences
taking them up on their option. You lose your personal duty weapon that's personally owned, Glock donates them. They should have been personal. They should have been personal.
No, they should have been, but they're not, and now this is the city's only recourse.
All right, so next headline. Cop draws gun on man for filming in his front yard. All right, so we're going to share this video on the Facebook page just so you can watch it.
Yeah.
I'll describe the video. So basically, a cop and his Ford Explorer is driving around, and I got to hurry because we're running out of time. And he rolls up on this guy that's filming the cop, and he jumps out of his car, demands to know what the guy's doing, and then draws his firearm on the guy that's filming him. And then the guy, like, kind of backs up. He's like, I don't want any trouble. I don't want you to, you know, why are you pulling your gun? The guy follows him with his gun drawn.
Yeah, to his driveway. Well, if you listen to the audio on it, he's telling him, the guy's filming with his right hand, apparently has his left hand in his pocket. The officer's telling him, take your hand out of your pocket. Apparently, he doesn't take it out quickly enough, and the first thing the officer does is draw his weapon. He has it down at his side. Never points it at the guy.
Thank goodness.
But still, that is a use of force. And it's an unlawful use of force, in my opinion,
well,
because he never puts the gun away.
In the state of California, if you're a concealed carrier and you draw your weapon in that manner, you're brandishing.
Well, apparently the guy does take his hand out of his pocket at some point, but the officer never puts his gun away and then continues to stand there and argue with him.
With a gun drawn.
With a gun drawn, and then just puts his gun away and gets in his vehicle and drives off. So we're going to post that video up on the Facebook page, and we kind of ran out of time. We got hooked on some stuff today with some good conversation. But
we'd love to hear your thoughts, though.
We would love to hear your thoughts on that. We're going to post that video up today. Let us know what you think about it. And until next week, this has been another edition of Armed Nevada Radio. And, Ben, take us out of here.
All right. Stay safe. Watch your six. And have a great week, guys. This is Armed Nevada Radio on 107.3 KNews.
Later.